You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
You can support us on Patreon and join our Discord server at patreon.com/WTFolklore.
Tra-la-dee-dee-ha-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-dee-ha-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-dee-ha-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your storyteller, Carmen.
Crime Weaver Tyler.
I lost it.
You have one job.
Where'd it go? Oh, here we go. I'm Gordy, Mr. Gordman, bring me some cream, make it the dopest that I've ever seen.
You're supposed to thank who gave you that title.
Thank you, Tally.
You didn't come up with it.
Arby's Oracle Tal.
Thank you.
Fantastic. I'm your guest anxious lizard, Danny.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to still be here.
You have not escaped our clutches yet.
Oh, man. I feel like we've been through a lot already. We've only done two pages.
Jenna, you'll be happy to know that your phoenix or firebird has become an emotional support firebird, helping Danny anxious lizard get through
get
this next phase. So from the title of the episode, assuming Gordy didn't crime it up, this should be labeled part two, so if you are starting here, wrong choice.
If you're a new listener, this is not the one for you.
Do last week instead.
Yeah, go there.
Unless yours just super cool.
I mean, here's the thing. You can do it. Maybe you like to listen out of order.
You're going to miss a lot of cool poop stuff, though.
Poop stuff?
Yeah.
Did we do poop stuff?
We ended with poop stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, sure.
That was moments ago.
It was 10 years ago.
Look.
Like, for the listener, it was a week, but for me and Danny, it was moments ago.
We've lived
a lot of life since then.
I hold nothing from these.
Yeah, this podcast goes in, I guess, out the mouth and then gone forever for me. It doesn't, there is no brain intervention that happens here.
What are we reading part two of?
So we are still reading Gracius and Percinet, or Gracie and Percocet, as we have retitled them. So this is a D'Aulnois tale as part of our D'Aulnois Calypse Anniversisode tradition.
We have too many calypses on this show.
This show is a calypse. So this is our annual reading of the Mad Baroness D'Aulnois' body of work, which tends to be long, exuberantly described, full of diamonds and no erasers.
Piss.
Used in the creation of these stories. So last week, for those of you who have listened to it already and don't want to go back and relive that, we understand. We read part one, in which we were introduced to yet another perfect princess protagonist. This one lives on jam, which does set her apart from the other one. Yeah, she eats 20 jars of jam at lunch, accompanied by, sugar candy. So that's her primary character feature. Her mom done died. Her dad was sad for a year, and then doctors told him to go get some vitamin D, and he wandered into a castle, and her grand enemy, an ugly duchess named Grognon, had a cellar that she said was full of wine, but was secretly full of diamonds, which she used to bribe the king into a marriage arrangement.
For kings.
Those diamonds.
So this last bit, the castle diamond marriage arrangement thing, has taken place within the last 24 hours story time. The princess is very upset at the prospect of this new stepmother, who does hate her, and has gone to cry about it in a garden, as princesses do. And there she has met a page who has shown out of nowhere and said that he is her page, and also he is a prince, Percocet, known for accomplishments of some kind, probably.
Maybe we'll find them
and
out.
Riches.
Yeah, who is in love with her and has loved her for a very long time, because a fairy gift, unspecified, has given him the ability to just watch her.
This is a fuckboy, right?
Hmm?
This is a fuck boy.
Yeah, no, two seasonal. So that's where we left off, is his reveal of this fairy gift and the spy cam that he's put in her bedroom. So
onward.
Here we go back.
Here we go.
All right, so after this reveal, the princess had been staring at him in astonishment, as you probably would.
Makes sense.
If someone had said they'd been watching you invisibly for the past several years. And, like, I guess probably mentally cataloging all the weird shit you do when you're alone.
you would think back to some choice moments.
He must really, that's how you know his love is real.
It's true.
Because he watched all that and is still into it.
Yeah.
Right. And instead of calling the police like a rational person, she says, "It's you, Fair Percocet, whom I've so longed to see."
What?
What? Why?
How?
"And of whom such wonderful things are told." So he wasn't lying when he said his accomplishments are not unknown.
Oh, okay.
So I guess he is allotted prince. What does Percocet do? Like the drug? I forget.
Oh, I don't remember.
Is it a painkiller?
That's what I thought.
Sure.
I think it's a painkiller.
I mean, I can see that being lauded in this, the time of random wars.
Yeah,
I guess we would find out.
Random wars and jam overdoses. She probably has a lot of sugar headaches that Percocet can really help her out with.
Yeah, for sure.
Do we really need to be here?
What, you guys?
Any of us.
Like on Earth?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Like on Earth living? Do we need
to? Experiencing this story. Because they seem to like know each other now.
Right.
And we still don't know anything about either of them.
Yeah,
the
story
is happening and we don't know anything.
Yeah, this is the opposite of the usual story situation. And I have just blanked on the name of this, where the audience knows more about what's happening than the characters do.
Dramatic irony?
Yeah, that one.
I got you.
Yeah, so what is the opposite of dramatic irony? Because this is
where the characters know more than the audience.
Yeah, and I don't think I've seen this used in a story before, so good on D'Aulnoy for inventing inverted dramatic irony.
It's like a movie where all of the characters are always at a middle distance, and they're whispering to each other, and they occasionally just stink eye at the camera. And that's all the information you get.
I mean, that's art.
You figure it out from there.
That is art.
It is art, because it's black and white. I forgot to mention.
Thank you for clarifying.
It's black and white and there's jump cuts. And that's how you know it's art.
And it was filmed by that French guy who does all the depressing stuff.
Which one?
You'll
have to narrow it down much further.
He was known for doing the jump cuts to try and like create parallels between ideas.
Yeah.
So he'd like show a gun and then show a face. And none of it made sense, but it was supposed to make you feel stuff.
You're talking about the French New Wave guy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I've watched his movie.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. That's depressing.
Just insert it in with like a robot voice here.
Sure.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Okay.
Afterwards.
You mean...
Jean-Luc Godard.
I've watched so many of his good movies.
We are all very, very smart, cultured film buffs here.
Yeah, good job, everybody.
Okay. What a joy to have you for a friend, Percocet. I don't fear wicked Grognon now that you will watch over my safety.
The goodness of his friendship is yet to be seen.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything yet except for spy on her while she sleeps.
Yeah, so far he has seen her change for bed. And that's not okay.
Jean-Luc Godard.
That one, yes,
I wanted to say Godot.
No, you have to wait for him. So they talked a bit longer about stuff. We don't get to hear it's the middle distant whispering that Tyler talked about.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you, D'Aulnoy.
Thank you, D'Aulnoy,
for this gift.
Story
I can't see or understand.
And then they returned to a palace where there was a horse waiting for Gracieuse.
Just a palace, not the palace. We've established that's three castles so far in this story. Where the hell are we?
In close proximity to each other.
They return to her palace.
Okay, it is hers. Okay.
As opposed to Grognon's or Percocet's? Are those the three?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, presumably Percocet has a tower from which he has the whole spy cam set up in his cellar.
Is the whole tower the spy cam?
Yeah.
Is it a giant telescope tower?
Yes.
Nice.
And this is a fairy gift.
And it's like super advanced technology. But they think it's magic because this is a dying Earth story. Cyberpunk.
Makes as much sense as anything else. I mean, I'm still totally down for Cyber Grognon. So this horse is so spirited that Percocet has to lead it for her. Or it will throw things. I don't know. Whatever horses do when they're spirited.
Okay.
And he is always looking toward the princess. For the joy of looking at her face.
The horse or Percocet?
Percocet.
Okay, cool.
And
so he is like handling the horse while still like eyeing her at all times. So, like,
is he an owl?
If yes,
I was gonna say some kind of. Is flounder? Do they have both eyes on one side?
So this is a thing.
Oh yeah, I think so.
All right. So in real life, it doesn't matter how handsome you are. This is always creepy. But in like a film context, this is the thing where the filmmaker can either set this up as romantic by casting the lead as an attractive person, or they set this up as creepy by casting a lead as a slightly less attractive person.
Oh, yeah.
Staring at her all the time?
Yeah. Like this can be cut both ways in film context, but in real life, always bad. Always bad.
Like, doesn't matter how good looking the person is.
Yeah, no.
Like, being stared at is always creepy.
Yeah, you're just going to assume he's going to Ted Bundy you.
It's a sliding scale between like a Chris Pratt and a Tobey Maguire.
Whoa. Tobey Maguire can stare at me?
In a creepy way.
Yeah. But I feel like it's not any more creepy than Chris Pratt.
Okay, Chris Pratt to Buscemi.
I would take Buscemi.
I take Buscemi.
The thing is, yeah.
Buscemi's like, fatherly wet gaze.
I do not care for that phrase at all. I find that deeply upsetting.
His big moist eyes.
Can you make the robot say that too?
I think in real life, I would be almost more disturbed by the handsome dude doing this because my assumption at that point would be you are used to getting away with shit because of your face, so you're going to murder me. And the like awkward dude, it's like, You might murder me. Like, there's still a chance of that, but you
it's
could...
It's always on the table.
Yeah, you could also just be awkward. I don't know. But
yeah, I think I trust I would the trust awkward guy more.
Not a lot, still. Like, there wouldn't be a lot of trust there, but I would be less inclined to just have murder on the table as the
yeah,
result
no, that's
of
fair.
This. Yeah, so this guy's a super creep, but...
Yeah.
Because he's hot, it's romantic.
If he's Chris Evans, I judge it's okay.
Okay.
I'm going to just...
Well, now we have our cast.
Yeah.
Chris Evans, Steve Buscemi, and Chris Ratt?
Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt, what's his name?
Pratt.
Yeah, Chris Pratt. And the other one, Tobey Maguire.
And all of them play the prince at some point.
Is he moonwalking with the horse? Is that how he's staring at it all
the
time?
Sure.
Good.
That
good.
Makes as much sense as anything else.
If they all play the prince, is it going to be like the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus?
I think it has to
the
be.
Imaginarium of Dr. Percocet.
I sure didn't see it.
You
but
didn't?
But I'm familiar with the.
Yeah.
Is that the one where they like have different actors playing?
Yeah.
Because Heath Ledger died.
Yes.
Partway through filming, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah,
so Johnny Depp and somebody else.
Jude Law. And Sean? Irishman.
Just Sean?
And my
it's Johnny
friend,
Depp, isn't it?
Eyebrows. Black
what?
Hair. The Irish man with the big eyebrows.
Are you saying
I know
the
who
other
you're
guy
talking
who
about,
did...
but because you said Sean, I can't get that out of my head.
What's
and
Colin
I can't
Farrell.
Colin Farrell, yeah.
Yes. Sean. I don't know where Sean came from. Yeah,
it's
there's
Colin Farrell's true name.
They got
and now he's in trouble because Gordy has revealed it.
They got three people to play.
It's a
jellical
cat name.
Yeah, Gordy says Sean and Colin Farrell broke out in a cold sweat somewhere.
All Irish people are named Sean. Or...
All right,
or...
Sean Murphy and Sean Crowley. You just adopt different fake names to keep it straight with your friends.
Or Callum. That's the other one you get.
Sean or Callum.
Sean or Callum.
All right, so I guess at some point they get together with Grognon because it switches abruptly from the prince guiding the horse while staring at her face like a creep ass to when the horse that was chosen for Grognon was compared to the horse that Gracius had, it looked like a sorry hack.
Ooh.
That's how awesome this horse is.
I feel like there's no reason to bring the horses into this.
I know. You know? Like they're
doing their job.
There's no such thing as an ugly horse.
Agreed.
And the saddle cloth that she had looked like absolute shit next to the princess's jeweled one, which seems like it'd be an uncomfortable saddle cloth for both the person and the horse. That is an impractical choice.
I mean, at least in that case, nobody wins.
Fair.
Everyone's on equal ground.
Socialism.
The king...
For horses.
Who is, from this point out, just an idiot. The king pays no attention to, like, this discrepancy, does not notice any of this. Like, all he sees is imaginary diamonds. His eyeballs have turned into the money symbol, and they're just stuck like that, so he doesn't notice anything. And as lords, we're just staring at his hot daughter and her hot page. Like, I guess depending on which one they're into, they're all about that. All
right.
So they meet Grognon on the road in an open carriage, and she's still ugly, in case you forgot. The story feels the need to, like, enumerate her flaws again. And when she sees the princess on the horse, she throws a tantrum and says she would rather not be a queen at all than to be treated like this.
Like what?
Having an uglier horse, I guess. So the king orders his daughter to trade horses with her.
It's thrilling.
Yep.
It's great.
So Grognon doesn't even thank anyone. And she is hoisted on the pretty horse like a bundle of dirty linen.
Ooh.
And she had to have 8 gentlemen help hold her onto it, but she's still grumbling under her breath about her ill treatment.
8 gentlemen.
Yep. When asked what's wrong, why she's still grumbling, she says, "I want the hot page to lead the horse like he did for the princess."
Is this Grognon?
Yeah, this is Grognon. So
Grognon, can you stay out of this, please?
Yeah.
I want you to be above this.
Yeah, like, Grognon has turned from, like, the cool, conniving villain of part one into just a child.
Yeah.
And I'm not into
it. I'm not pro-Grognon anymore.
Time makes fools of us all.
That's the real moral here.
So the page moves over to her horse, but with a tragical look shared between him and the princess, because this is, of course, a horrible thing to have happen.
And also, he is unbreaking in his eye contact.
Yeah, no, still he's owling his neck around.
You think that part of his, like, protecting her would be trying to keep a low profile right now.
You
like,
think.
Maybe stop staring at her in front of her stepmom who wants to kill her.
You're gonna give the game away, you think?
I think so.
So the court set out with drums and trumpets. I'm guessing this is the wedding day, but maybe this is still the like, random Tuesday before, and she's just coming to the palace.
Well,
now.
She wants to arrive to the wedding on horseback, right?
Yeah.
Is this that?
I guess so.
It is incredible to me that Dolnoy set a timeline for herself of 24 hours, and it is still unclear when it is. Like, we have so few hours to work with, and we still don't have any idea which one
we're
it is.
We're still just throwing darts at a dartboard.
Is this a very early pilot? Like, did she conceptualize the TV phenomenon 24? Hundreds of years before it was broadcast?
24 is just a fanfic of the Dolnoy fanfic of the Cupid and Psyche myth.
That's a weird lens to think of that torture show through.
I mean, in a way, this is a torture show, right?
Is Jack Bauer, James, what is it, Psyche?
Yeah.
I don't remember that well enough to make 24 comparisons.
We have read a lot of Cupid and Psyche stories on this show.
Which one of them was the counterterrorism specialist? Was it Psyche or Cupid?
Who has to go back to like another place, and who needs to do the rescuing?
What, in 24?
Yeah.
Jack Bauer does the rescuing.
He
does. He is Psyche.
Okay, great.
He is Psyche who dropped the candle wax on whatever the Cupid of that situation is.
And that's a torture.
That
dropping
is a torture.
Candle wax. Yep.
There you go.
There we go.
Airtight. No flaws.
Got him again.
All right, so the court set out with drums and trumpets, and now Grognon is delighted. And even though she is ugly still, in case you forgot, she would not trade places with the princess for the world. But then suddenly, the beautiful horse, who is, as aforementioned, spirited, reared, kicked, and ran so fast that no one could stop him. And he runs off with Grognon holding onto the saddle and mane, crying loudly, as you probably would in a situation. Her foot catches in the stirrup, and she gets dragged over stones and through thorns and mud. So that turns into a pretty shitty wedding day, or wedding pre-day, whichever one it is.
Yeah, wherever we are.
So everyone finally catches up to her and finds her scratched up, with her head broken in 4 or 5 places, and
with
a fracture.
I'm sorry, with her head broken?
Yes, her head broken.
Like skull fractures?
Yeah, she has 4 or 5 skull fractures. And a fractured arm.
Where
are we possibly going?
Whose head got...
Grognon.
Because the horse dragged her away.
Yeah, Grogdon has had a terrible horse accident.
Now, does the jelly make a difference?
Did he drag her near
a
boat?
Good question.
The jelly has kept her alive.
What?
Did he drag her near a boat? Give us something to, like, ground
us.
Yeah,
I'm still watching.
Boat. There's no
Is
boat.
A horse just a land boat, in a way?
Gordy, you are too early in this to start getting abstract again. All right, so the king is in despair, so it seems like he actually cares about her, because he has the key to her treasure room.
He does have
room,
the key now, that's fair.
So, like, he doesn't need to be
upset
about
this. He doesn't need her
this.
Head in any variety.
Right. But he is actually in despair about this, and she is gently brought back to town and put to bed and given the best doctors. But she's still, in spite of her skull fractures, able to scold and blames Gracieuse for picking a beautiful but vicious horse, specifically to make her jealous. And if the king doesn't put it right, she is going to leave forever. So the king is madly in love with at least her treasure and seems to like
her. This is all escalated very quickly.
Yeah. So he swears to enact whatever punishment Grognon sees fit for his horrible, misbehaving daughter.
Is this still part of the long con?
I guess maybe.
This is turning into a very long
con. Did she let a horse fuck her up on purpose?
No, I think this is a shortening of the long con, because I think she did want to feel beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's why.
Yeah, but now, like, her hand's kind of been forced.
A unique opportunity has presented itself.
She's going to have the beautiful party wedding day of her dreams that she's, like, dreamed about since she was a kid. And then she was going to enact her revenge once that was secure. But now she has to...
Now it's revenge time?
Yeah.
So they're not married?
I don't think the wedding has happened.
Is it postponed?
I mean, her head got broken in four places. I feel like you've got to postpone the wedding.
Probably, yeah. That's a good reason to put it off.
So they send for Gracieuse, and Gracieuse is scared, and she can't see Percocet, who's using his fairy gift to be invisible, I guess. When she gets inside, four women who are like furies throw themselves on her and rip off her clothes.
What?
What?
Excuse me.
So Grace, the princess, gets inside Grognon's chambers, and Grognon has four fury waiting women.
Grognon has been writing her own fan fiction.
Yeah, she.
She
owns four furies.
She has basically four furies in waiting. I don't think they're actual furies, but I think they're very angry women. I guess I don't know.
She employs four angry women.
Yes, and they are referred to as furies from here on out.
Okay, I could also do that.
And so they.
So I buy that. I could hire four women to be angry and call them furies.
You are my furies.
Would you like my resume?
And to be like,
I'm
back in Grognon's court on this one, because that is a cool name for your retinue.
Yeah.
The Furies?
Yeah, like, these are my furies.
That's another good band name.
I mean, I like any boss that hires mid-bosses.
Like mini bosses that
it's just
also
good
fight.
Design.
Yeah.
All right, so the Furies...
Sell more merchandise that way.
The Furies throw themselves on Gracieuse and rip off her clothes. And Grognon yells from her bed to have her flayed until not a morsel remains of that skin that she thinks is so beautiful.
Holy hell!
Right.
So this was the long con.
They're going to flay her?
Yes.
Whew.
Just like she was an old woman.
Like she was a flayed old woman.
I did not think this is where this was going.
Perhaps.
I mean, how would you know with Donois? Like, you can
but
make
the trick
predictions.
Is the jam is holding her skin together.
It's an adhesive.
It's an adhesive. You can't flay her.
The jam has given her such regenerative properties.
Yeah.
She just grows new jam skin.
She becomes a warlord known as Grace the Unflayable.
That'd be pretty good. I'd read
that would
about
be great,
that.
Yeah. In the midst of any other trouble, she would wish for Percocet to come to her, and I would wish
wish for Percocet if I was being flayed. Yes. Very much so.
This is a fitting name you've chosen for me, Danny, so good job.
Thank you.
But she is basically naked right now, and she is very modest and old-fashioned. So she,
oh my God.
She doesn't want him to witness her lady parts. So she decides it's better to suffer a flaying than to have a man see her in her negligee. She's a good girl.
This is the wrong answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, incorrect.
Again,
this is the wrong answer.
Known for her quick wit.
No, well, let's see what she comes up with.
I'm still waiting to see it displayed at all.
Known for her brilliance, she comes up with the strategy of go ahead and flay me. I guess.
I don't see any way out of
this. No more options. Oops.
So they flog her, and she is flayed from head to foot.
What? No.
Or so it seems. Because Percocet put a charm on the eyes of the women, so what they thought were rods were actually feathers of every possible color. Because we're going to make this.
Wait, how magic is he? I thought he just had a...
Apparently the fairy gift has a lot of applications.
Stuff? Okay.
And that's why she doesn't... She knew if she explained the fairy gift early on, she'd write herself into a corner, and I guess she's gotten like experienced enough with the pulling random best friends out of hats.
Is this the first MacGuffin? Like just all powerful object that does whatever you need it to.
It's an unspecified plot hole filler.
This is just the Allspark.
The Allspark.
All right, so feathers of every possible color, because it's not enough for them to be feathers. They do have to be further described and extra fancy.
Well, yeah.
They're from every bird.
Do you use a rod to flay somebody?
I have never flayed anyone, so I can't. I don't know the flaying mechanism.
I assumed it was a whip, but I guess I'm wrong.
In my admittedly very limited experience, which is none, flaying somebody, you use a blade, right?
I would assume.
Oh, I always thought because flaying is like a flogger.
Like a fleshing knife, flincing knife, that's it.
If I'm going to flay a fruit, which I have done, I use some kind of knife. Right? I do not use any kind of rod.
I do like recontextualizing peeling as flaying.
I mean, you are.
And I like taking that to Danny's logical conclusion of whipping a fruit to death.
That's how I get
cooking
on my mangoes.
Tyler, I would watch that show. I want to see Tyler crime up a cooking show on YouTube.
So true story about the first time I bought a mango.
I do know this one.
I bought a mango at the farmer's market. I was really proud of myself, and I didn't know how to make it work. So I Googled.
What do I do with a mango?
I found a WikiHow article, and I still couldn't figure it out. So I got mad and threw it in my backyard.
Did I get you a fruit peeler after that story? I feel like I got you a fruit peeler.
That sounds true. I don't remember.
Did it grow a mango tree?
No.
Sadly.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
I don't buy mangoes anymore. I wait for them to come to me.
Pre-cut.
That's my mango. Yep.
You can buy them dried.
Oh, and in pieces,
and it's pretty good. Yeah.
Big fan.
I had a dark chocolate covered mango, dried mango. That was really good. That. Yeah.
Okay.
You do want that. I'm here to tell you.
All right.
I can't find them. A student brought them in, but I don't know where she got them.
I will Google them.
All right. So when the floggers were too tired to flog anymore, they put her in clothes and sent her out of the room, calling her names as they went, like, we can't move our arms anymore, but we will insult you with schoolyard name calling as you leave.
Do they see her as flayed now?
Yeah. Because of
that's part of the magic.
They see her as flayed, but
they are putting her clothes back on what they think is flayed flesh, which is pretty gross.
They're using feathers though.
Yeah.
Do you think so? They're basically tickling her.
Yeah, yeah. So like she has to not giggle, which is
I'm imagining her like giggling while they flay her.
I mean,
which is grim.
That would be terrifying. Like that's a good. That's a good way to...
That is a power move.
I'm glad I have the support phoenix.
I like this.
And then Grognon is afraid.
That is a Giles Corey more weight kind of power move.
Did Grace know what flaying was before it happened? Because she might have the very wrong idea now that it is being tickled by every bird.
I don't know. She knows it's supposed to be bad because she pretends to be ill and goes to her room and she refuses to see anyone but her nurse. Not that it seems like anyone else is interested in her. Like her dad was like,
she's flayed now.
Do whatever. Got to get more diamonds. So she tells the nurse the whole story and falls asleep. And the nurse leaves her because I guess the nurse is bored of hanging out with a sleeping princess. And when she wakes up, she sees the hot page in a dark corner.
Nope.
He's not making this better.
Nope.
You can't.
This is a horror story that she's trying to make into a romance.
It's no good.
Is this a thing that happened to her and she's trying to justify
the events? I hope this has happened to nobody.
Yeah, no, I hope this is not based on a true story.
This is starting to feel like she had a stalker and she's trying to like justify it.
Yeah, recontextualize it as I'm hot and perfect and
quick-witted.
This isn't terrifying in the worst. So yeah, he's looming in a dark corner.
I would read that story, I think.
Not daring to come near for reason of respect for her.
Are there undarkened corners?
Yeah, there.
Was the dark corner a choice?
Yes.
Good question.
I believe so, because it probably has windows, right?
You think he saw a well-lit corner and a dark corner is like, no, this,
like how, no, how much I want to wait sure. How much fretting did he do? Like while
well,
he was
also,
waiting for her to arrive.
How long has he been there? Right. Like, has
did
he
go back and forth?
The nurse? Yeah.
Between corners.
I can't decide.
I mean, he can apparently be invisible, so he can fret all he wants, and no one has to witness it.
That's the dream.
Man, he's definitely seen this princess without her clothes on, though, right?
Oh, faux show.
Sure. No, he just has, because he was presumably there.
I mean, at this point, who hasn't? Every character in the story has.
Like, you just flay shame the princess.
It. Yeah. All right. So she thanks him for his help and then begs him never to leave her to the fury of her enemy. But in the meantime, please go away because I'm not allowed to be alone with boys.
Does the story say that?
Not that specifically, but like she is not supposed, like it's inappropriate to be alone with a man. Like that's the reason she wants him to leave.
Wait outside.
The Mike Pence rule. This is where it comes from.
He's a big folktale fan. Little known fact.
Mike Pence, that fairy tale boy. Yeah.
It's his Twitter.
This is...
Sorry, Tinder.
She lives in the Duke Tip camp rule situations where doors have to be open and all feet on the ground at all times.
The what?
Duke Tip camp rules.
You can get a lot done with your feet on the ground.
You can.
Duke?
If you're creative, that's a dumb rule.
Yeah, the tip program. Did you not do the tip program?
What is the tip program?
Like, if you scored a certain level on the pre-SATs, you qualified to do this, like, college-level course thing over summer camps times.
Did we have that? I don't know if we had that.
I don't know if you had it. I mean,
that doesn't sound like a thing I had access to.
Which is weird, because the tip campuses were all in North Carolina, except for, like, the writing one off in the West.
Oh, maybe I just didn't do it.
But yeah, they had, like, really strict rules. You could not play any fantasy games.
Because why?
Apparently the devil, maybe?
Yeah, the devil.
Oh, the D&D, yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't play D&D. But it was really vaguely phrased, like we weren't supposed to do anything fantasy. But all of us were like writers and creative people. And so we'd talk to each other about our story ideas. And then our loud friend Mina would shout down the hall, "It's not fantasy," to get us make sure that we weren't getting in trouble. And then there's the foot rule. So that's the world she's living in. Anyway, he gets kind of offended by this, which is always a great sign.
Yeah.
And he says, "I am evidently respecting you. Like, I am very clearly, I don't see why you think I'm not respecting you."
This guy sucks. That's not a phrase you should accept from anybody.
This is the worst prince, and we have read some really bad princes.
This podcast.
We have read a prince so bad that we set wolves on him in an epilogue, but this is a worse prince than that.
This whole podcast is really just like an elaborate analysis of who you should watch out for. This is a series of red flags.
But it is only right for him to obey her in all things, even at the cost of his own happiness. So he leaves her after advising her to continue pretending to be very ill. So we had to get a little bit of mansplaining in there because it's not like she could possibly understand the direness of the situation.
Right, of course.
Her new almost stepmom just had her flayed alive. Like, she probably knows.
Well, she didn't.
I mean, to the knowledge of anyone who matters.
Right.
That was the intent.
Right.
And it was carried out to the best of their ability. And it was only magic that made that not happen. So yeah, Princess knows the stakes, I think.
Yeah.
Grognon, meanwhile, is so tickled at the princess's flogging that she gets better twice as fast.
Whoa.
So her healing is accelerated by her enjoyment of torment. And the wedding happens. So we were within that first 24 hours. So now we have an
Thanks
idea.
For clarification.
So the king knew that Grognon's favorite thing was to be called beautiful. So he like takes time to get to know her and like cares about what she thinks.
Is which this is, the best king we've ever had?
It's the best and the worst king. Like best king, worst dad, I guess. Best husband, worst
dad. Best husband, worst dad.
Because like he only married her for the jewels, it says, but it seems like he like he's making an
effort. Yeah, he's putting effort in.
Wants her happy. So he had a portrait of her painted, and he ordered a tournament to be arranged, and he ordered all of his knights to maintain to all newcomers that Grognon is the fairest princess in the whole world, and just, like, gaslight anyone who comes in into accepting that. So foreign knights were unfortunately not convinced by all these people, like, yeah, she's a hottie. But they were all defeated by the king's knights, because they're really good. It took a lot of time to figure out what was happening in this scene, so I hope I've clarified it for you.
Yeah, I get it.
Because it was not described well, and there were a lot more words. So Grognon watched all this and was pleased that the prowess of her knights were triumphing in her wicked cause of being declared beautiful when she's not, which is wicked according to Dolnois. And Gracieuse was like stationed behind her, and I am assuming is still like flogged to her eyes. Question.
Sometimes it's flogged and sometimes it's flayed. What happened to her? Because the fact that they use rods, did they just beat her and not actually try to remove the skin from her body?
It's not clear.
Okay, cool.
Because
cool.
It is both.
Cool.
So,
and is, neither.
Yeah, both and neither. So she is, I'm assuming the magic still has her like wounded to Grognon's eyes at all times.
And the Furies.
Yeah.
About the
but no one else sees that because she is standing behind Grognon, and so all the knights are looking at her because she's hot.
Yeah,
and Grognon assumes that they're looking at Grognon.
It's good placement.
Okay, so there was hardly a knight left who would dispute Grognon's beauty when a young man approached with a portrait in a diamond box.
Good start.
He says
he approaches Grognon.
He approaches the like tournament area.
Oh, okay.
And he's carrying a diamond box in which is a portrait
of what?
Unknown yet.
Well, James. How do we know it's a portrait?
I guess it is looks it, like one.
Is it sticking out of the box? Like
no,
the
it's
corners?
Like it's in it. Maybe you can see like the shape of it, but you can't see the details because diamond.
What?
Like diamonds are clear.
Yeah.
So you can see something in there.
It's like a macaroni art. Portrait
yeah,
with diamonds.
Be amazing.
That'd be
sure.
good.
Yeah, let's go with that. That sounds better. So he declares that Grognon is the most hideous of all women.
What?
Who is you?
This is at her wedding?
This is at a tournament. The wedding's long gone.
Oh, that's
this
sorry.
Is, this
that's...
is the Grognon Hotness Tournament 2019 or whatever.
The Summer Grognon Games.
1719 Summer Grognon Hotness Games. And in his diamond box, there is a portrait of the fairest woman in all the world.
Grognonaru.
I was also working on a Bonnaroo pun.
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
I was trying to get around
I was like,
Coachella
Bonnagrog?
Or something.
That doesn't work.
Yeah. So he charged the king 6 knights. And threw them all to the ground. And then 6 more came, and he threw them to the ground.
Who is the portrait
They didn't
of?
Just have him murdered for calling her ugly?
And this, now, this is a tournament. I guess there are rules, and but he, only some.
And nobody knows who this person is.
Yeah, he's a mysterious knight.
So he's not wearing any coat of arms
no,
or...
Just, yeah, he's mysterious.
A flag.
Is he's it Percocet?
The Vigescu.
So 24 total knights attacked him, but he was victorious over all of them. And then he opened the box and showed a portrait of Gracieuse.
Okay.
You dumb motherfucker.
And then he leaves without giving his name, but the princess is pretty sure it's Percocet.
That seems like a Percocet move.
A portrait of her from when?
Classic Percocet.
I think the true beauty face, which seems to undo the whole thing and put her back into harm's way, which... doesn't make sense in the context of what the story is trying to be, but does make sense in his gaslighty, manipulative way.
Yeah, like, he's the worst.
Like, he needs her to need him.
Mm-hmm.
so that he can stay close. He has been banished from her bedroom, and the only way that he can, like, get back in her favor
is to put her in danger.
Yeah, and ooh, so that's what he's yikes. Doing.
It's a real cheap trick.
And I don't think Donois realized that that's what she was doing with this story. Good fucking lord.
I was going to say, that was not a good follow-up to their original hit.
Cheap so, tricks?
Yeah.
Grognon chokes with anger.
Grog mommy's all right.
She chokes with anger, and she couldn't even speak for a bit, but when she finally gets her voice back, she throws another fit at the princess, who offers to call Grognon beautiful and herself ugly, like anything to get the heat off. But it's a little too late for that. And the king, who is not here for this, I guess he's like in his cellar looking at his diamonds for this tournament. Like, he sets it up for her, but he's not...
not a tournament fan.
Yeah, not into it.
Yeah.
So he is told of the fury of his wife and how his daughter, half dead with fright, had begged, like when they bring the word to the king, for him to have pity on her. But he just kind of shrugs and tells him, well, I gave her to her stepmom, so let her do whatever. Like, ooh, those were the terms of our marriage.
Worst dad.
Worst dad. Best husband. Worst dad.
It's probably not intentional, but it's kind of nice that the king is not interested in sports and is interested in jewelry.
Good for you, Donois. Ahead of your time.
Uh-huh. It's very, what, gender non-conforming of her?
For a king.
Is that fair?
I think so. He did go hunting earlier.
Well, he tried to, and then he got upset.
He got hot.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable. Outside sucks. I want to play video games and count my money.
I wouldn't do much better hunting, I don't think. I probably wouldn't get personally. To the part the doctor, where I started.
Yeah, he wasn't mourning his wife. He was just using it as an excuse not to have to go outside because he hates it. Until the doctors order him to get some vitamin D and do something to undo the jam problems. Get some exercise and vitamin D, or you will just be a sugar slug. All right, so Grognon waits impatiently for night for some reason. Because I guess that's evil times, and you can't do other things until then.
It is the best time to do evil.
She sings the In the Dark of the Night song from the Anastasia movie.
On repeat until it becomes nighttime.
The like, what?
The In the Dark of the Night song that Rasputin sings in the Anastasia film.
That they used that? What?
Yeah, Delnois wrote that song.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of In the Still of the Night, which is a Whitesnake song.
which does not change for the Anastasia Dunluth film.
Is that Whitesnake? What's Still of the Night? You know what I mean?
But I don't know who sings it.
In the Dark of the Night is one of the most solid villain songs ever written. So she does play this on repeat until nightfall. And as soon as it's dark, she harnesses up some horses and she forces Gracieuse into a carriage and takes her away 100 leagues, which seems like a really long...
to a boat?
A long journey.
Where they sail away.
To a great forest.
Ooh.
Is anti-boat.
Is leagues a land measurement?
I think leagues is a boat like measurement,
that,
Tyler.
I feel like that is exclusive to boats.
I think that is... it's not, though.
No, it's just distance.
No, it's definitely not.
Then
20,000 leagues under the sea, I know.
Yeah.
You'd think. There's a lot of things Delnois gets wrong.
Well, I mean, how many leagues are there on Earth before you run into water in any direction?
Yeah, it's just a unit of length.
Yeah, so, it's 3 miles?
So yeah, there are no boats. Chill.
God damn it.
Not yet.
So they're in a forest, and this forest is full of lions, bears, tigers, and wolves. So it's a good zoo that they got going on there.
That's not a zoo, though. What?
It's a nature preserve.
It's woods.
Yeah, but it's got lions, bears, tigers, and wolves.
I think we've talked about this before. Are there places on Earth where all of those animals live concurrently?
I don't think so.
Not anymore. I think there might have been some, because like wolves ranged a little bit further south, and like lions and tigers ranged more east or westwardly and north than they do now. So I think there might have been like a narrow overlap area.
Mm, but those. Currently, there is no place on Earth where you will see all those in the wild at once.
No, not currently.
We could fix that.
We have.
Could we?
Yeah, breakout.
A jailbreak. I don't know if the problem is that they're confined.
Well, I just, if you want it to be true.
Oh, you're saying if you disappear all the walls in the Atlanta Zoo, you will see that.
They will be in the wild.
Yeah.
And what? Together.
The wild streets of Atlanta.
Well, we could move them further. We got a bus.
Do we? When do we get a bus?
We do.
We have our eyes on a bus.
We have sourced a bus, and we do have the money for a bus.
To buy an old school bus.
Yeah, guys, old school buses are way cheaper than a car, so that might, when the Ford Focus dies, that might be the next thing. Probably more reliable.
This changes everything.
All right, so she wanders, so they just, like, shove her out of the carriage into this forest, and I guess wheelie off out back home. It's a really long journey for what is kind of a disappointing conclusion, but it's like, all right, well, take out the trash.
That is the subtitle of Dolnois' memoirs.
So the princess uses all of her quick wits and other skills to wander aimlessly, falling down, getting tangled in bushes, bruising herself against a tree, until she gets so grieved that she just throws herself on the ground, having no strength left, and cries for Percocet.
That is the Dolnois heroine that I know. That's what I expect.
Beautiful and perfect and can't do a damn thing.
I mean, I get it. Sometimes you just lay on the ground and wait. And hope something happens.
Been there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
There are days like that.
Gordy has come home to me doing that with Cricket on the ground next to me.
We have given that advice before.
Just kind of heavy size.
What?
Just lie on the ground and wait.
Yeah, just let a problem get big enough until it goes away.
Yeah.
Eventually the problem gets bored and leaves you. It's like dealing with bears.
Is that what you do for bears?
Some of them.
Wait for them to get bored?
Yeah. Some of them you just like lay still. Other bears, that's a bad choice. I don't remember which bear is which, so get yourself a field guide.
I'm pretty sure with polar bears, you are fucked either way.
Probably. I think grizzlies also.
Yeah. But I think like a brown bear.
Yeah, and a black bear. Like,
please no one take this advice to heart. I'm not an expert on bears.
We have not received the bear grant yet, so we can't say with a clear scientific perspective which bear responds best to laying down on the ground and waiting for it to go away.
We have no bear certification.
All right, so she cries for Percocet and suddenly sees the most beautiful and most astonishing thing that has ever existed in the whole world. It is an illumination.
LeVar Burton?
So
I would give all of my money. To be fair, I don't have much. But if LeVar Burton showed up in this story somehow.
Be pretty good, yeah.
Oh, that'd be the greatest twist of all time.
It was an illumination so magnificent that there wasn't a tree in the forest not hung with several chandeliers. And at the end of an avenue, she saw a palace made of crystal.
Ooh.
She reasonably figures Percocet is somehow responsible for this, and she has a sensation of joy mingled with fear, which is like
classic Percocet.
The fear taint is the first.
Fear taint, gross.
That's how you know.
It's the first evidence of her wit that we've seen in this story. Is
accurate.
That she's excited about Percocet, but it is a fearful excitement. So, subconsciously, she knows this ain't right.
Why is she in the woods?
Grognon threw her in a carriage and sent her there and then shoved her out.
When was the last time we saw Percocet? Fighting?
We think he might have been the mystery guy at the tournament.
The knight who got
Grognon. We assume it's him.
Yeah.
Okay.
But officially, he was creeping in the dark corner of her room. You know, because romantic.
All right, so the fear that she feels, I guess, kind of takes over because she starts a monologue at this point.
No.
To who? About what?
To herself. No. About feelings.
No, no, no.
I am alone.
This is extremely late in the story for the I Want song.
The prince is young and beautiful and full of affection to me, and I owe my life to him, but I must not think of him. It is better to die than to love him.
Why? I mean, I know he sucks, but...
We know he sucks. She has not previously shown awareness.
Yeah, it seems like she's mostly drinking this Kool-Aid, so...
I mean, even in this, she's drinking the Kool-Aid. So it's just like Dolnois, like, I need more tension in this story. But I can't have her say she doesn't like him, because I don't know how to pin those words. So she does like him. He is perfect, and she would rather die.
A tragedy.
Yeah, by Don Juan, age 30.
Put it on the fridge.
It's written in crayon. No erasers. So she gets up in spite of her fatigue, and she walks in the opposite direction of the castle.
Oh, man.
And she is so troubled and so confused in her mind with different thoughts crowding there that she didn't know what she was doing. So much wit.
That makes all of us.
Finally, we can relate to this character.
That was what I needed. That was the on-ramp.
She hasn't had jam in a while, so she's probably like experiencing a sugar crash.
I'm starting to feel withdrawals.
So she hears a noise behind her, and she thinks it's a wild beast coming to devour her, as you would. So she turns around to look at it, and she sees Percocet as beautiful as love himself.
Great.
No.
Don Juan.
I don't agree.
Don Juan is hot for Cupid. Like, she fantasizes all the time about Cupid. He is her OTP, I guess.
Her what?
One true pairing.
One what?
True
what
pair.
It's, yeah.
Is this a thing?
It's a fanfic thing.
Outside the perimeter.
Yeah. It's, yep.
Yeah, you nailed it. That.
That's Atlanta specific.
So Percocet says, are you fleeing from me? Do you fear me when I adore you?
Ew.
Yes.
Can you have so poor an idea of me as to think I could be lacking in respect for you?
We know nothing about you.
We know some things about you.
We know all the bad parts.
I know enough, I think.
Yeah, no, I feel like I have formed an opinion.
That it's like, yeah, it's really going to take...
You've watched her without her knowledge for probably years.
It's really going to take a lot to change my mind on Percocet.
Come on, go to the fairy palace. I won't go in if you don't want me there, but my mom and sisters are there.
No, don't meet the mom and sisters.
So she gets into a fancy sleigh drawn by stags that I guess just appears now. And he takes her on a tour of the forest and not to the castle at all, which is another giant red flag. Like, in real life, this would result in murder. I have listened to enough true crime podcasts that, like, the fact that this has not killed people yet is astounding.
This is a tip from me to everybody.
Don't go to the second location.
Speak to no one. Do nothing. For any reason, and this will not happen to you.
That's maybe the most Ron Swanson thing to ever come out of your mouth. And I feel like you angle toward Ron Swanson things more than the rest of us.
Sometimes, but I am very staunchly not a libertarian. What is the socialist Ron Swanson?
I think that's just Nick Offerman.
Can I be? Yeah. There we go.
Two sides of the same coin.
All right. So it's daylight everywhere, which I guess is important. And
it's
in
daylight what?
Everywhere.
On Earth?
That's not how that works.
That's something has gone very wrong if that has happened.
Everywhere in this forest,
and then the Earth unfolded. That's it. Flat Earth confirmed. Daylight everywhere at once is only one way that can happen.
I guess this is remarkable because she was dumped in the forest at night, presumably.
I guess.
And so he puts her in a carriage.
Is that remarkable or is that time?
It's remarkable that Don Juan, whose understanding of time has been, as previously displayed, loose.
Yeah, it is maybe the inevitable effects of linear time.
To live in Duldois' universe where you are surprised that the next day comes on schedule.
That
is an ill omen.
In the forest, she sees shepherds and shepherdesses dressed beautifully and dancing with each other while I guess they're sheep.
Shepherds?
Just, like, wander off a cliff or whatever. They're not doing shepherding things. They're just dressed nice and dancing.
And in the blazing sunlight.
Like, how do you know dancing, that they're shepherds? They're not doing
dancing
it.
Dancing with who?
Each other.
Shepherds? Just dancing with
and
other shepherds.
And shepherdesses.
Yeah. Yep. Do they just have the crooks? Like, is it a special shepherd dance?
I hope it's a special shepherd dance.
It is a special. It's a cultural shepherd dance.
There were village lads and their sweethearts feasting and singing, and she ran out of ideas of what there could be in the forest at this point. So,
great.
This isn't even is in the Wonderful Sheep. Doesn't something really similar happen?
It's just sheep dancing and eating ice cream.
Yeah,
and like
that's
trees
a,
full of meat.
That's a hair's breadth away from what's happening now.
That's true. And Gracios shouts, "I thought this was an uninhabited forest. Since you have come, this dark solitude is now full of pleasure and gaiety." So it was, I guess, a dark forest, and then he throws her in a carriage, and now it's full of dancing people and sunlight.
Is he magic, or does he just have this one? Like, he described it as the fairy castle a minute ago, and that's where his mom and sisters are.
Yeah,
like,
maybe the what? Fairy gift is that he is a fairy.
Is this just
know.
Thumbelina?
It's starting to sound like
right?
it.
And then she says, "The loves accompany you," and I hate the loves as a noun. Like, this is a thing that always gives me bad mouth feel. "And flowers spring up where you tread."
Oh.
Okay. He says that since she's come to the dark solitude.
Yeah.
This is what
she's
happened.
She's made this a great place.
Yeah. So she said, "I thought this was an uninhabited forest. I should take better notes." And he says that you have come to this place full of, and made it this way.
And why does he say dark solitude?
Because he's an edgelord.
He's
that's
super
not,
cool.
That's also not a
phrase.
A phrase that I want to hear.
Did he swoosh his cape at the
so
same
yeah,
time?
He says, "The loves accompany you and flowers spring up where you tread," and she doesn't want to take part in this kind of conversation, capitalized, and begs the prince to take her to the queen. And we will stop there for this episode.
Has anything happened yet?
Well, there was the Grognon Championship 2019.
There was that.
Did the flaying happen in this episode?
Yeah.
Did the flaying happen just this episode?
Yeah, it did. Just
it feels like 10 years since the flaying.
So, yeah, she was fake flayed. They came up with this great thing to keep Grognon happy and keep her safe. And then he realized that makes him useless. So he punches 24 guys and says, Gracios is the hot one, and then leaves her to her fate, which is to be dumped into woods.
That she makes awesome.
Yeah.
Time to meet the queen.
Now, we started off on flaying level, and then we ended on dumped in woods level. So this is kind of going the opposite direction. Most stories take their punishment trees.
No, Grognon came out the gate strong.
Yeah, she was so excited to get the revenge that she kind of came heavy at the front and then ran out of ideas immediately.
I mean, to be fair, if it had not been for weird prince magic, once is all she needs. She's the ender of this,
yeah.
of this universe.
I guess, yeah. But, go at it hard with your best idea.
Like,
and
why,
when that doesn't work,
why dick around? Yeah, then get rid of it.
Is dumping in a forest, is that psychological?
I think it's just make it go away.
Are we building to another more terrible torment, whatever comes third?
Well, I don't think she's going to go like back for her.
That's it, you think?
I think so. I think it's going to be a surprise to Grognon
this is
what's her name is alive.
This is the evil stepmother.
Yeah,
sees the,
like, this is Snow White.
Sees
now.
The heart and is like, oh, she's yeah, she's probably dead.
I think is the vibe I get personally.
Okay.
I think that she just wanted her gone. Like, she tried the fling and it didn't work. And she's like, this is going to be a mess. Like, I can keep trying to punish her, but there's obviously something.
I've read fairy tales
yeah,
before.
There's something going on here that's protecting her. So, like, ultimately, I just wanted the fuck out of my kingdom so I can continue to be the center of attention. So Grognon's one of our smarter villains and winning me back to her side in spite of the tantrum.
You're still on Grognog, the Grognog train.
I mean, I don't think she's a good person, but everyone in this story sucks. So,
no,
like, you can't really play on that field. I think she is the smartest villain we've had.
Yeah, I have a measure of respect for her.
Right. Like, I don't like her. I don't want to get coffee with her.
I respect Grognog's game.
I respect her
game. Game-recognized game.
I'll tip my hat to Grognon.
I respect yes. Grognon more than I respect any other damn character in this story, because we have Creeper Prince, we have Bad Dad, and we have Full of Wit Cry Princess.
You say the jam you keep princess. Saying Grognon, and I expect Rick and Morty to show up because it sounds like a Rick and Morty thing.
It does a little bit,
yeah. Anything else to discuss on this one?
I respect the four Furies who are ready to tear a woman apart.
The Furies are awesome.
The snap of a finger.
And they're part of Grognon's retinue, and I'm assuming Grognon named them.
Like, named them the Furies.
Yeah,
she has these, they all have matching jackets. Terrifying women on retainer.
You don't think they...
Yeah, she's a good villain.
You don't think that they marketed themselves that way to get hired?
Like she was looking through the paper.
Interesting.
If I was in a group... And I wanted to get hired tear people apart.
A biker gang women's group of
I would probably
serial
you would advertise as the Furies.
I would probably list us as something like the Furies.
Regardless of who named them, it's a good group.
In fiction,
like, that's a good villain setup.
In fiction, we have a mercenary group called the Bits Men. I think because they were hired to get bits of somebody, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is this ringing bells?
Yeah.
It is. I remember saying those words.
I would like to add the Furies as competitors.
On the mercenary scale?
Like you're flipping through the mercenary catalog. Oh,
yeah. You see bits men. You call 1-800-BITS-MEN to get them or something else to get the Furies.
And then alphabetically listed below is
you,
the Furies.
You screech into the night of new moon. And then the Furies come. All right, so that's going to do it for us for this episode. Join us next week for the thrilling conclusion of Gracius and Personette.
Grognon's last ride. Final stand.
Grognon's final stand next week. So thank you for joining us on this journey. Thank you, Danny, for struggling through this one with us.
It has been an honor.
Thank you.
This is a bonding experience.
Thank you to our patrons for supporting the show over the past several years. It's been a wild ride, and you guys have made it a true delight. And thank you to our top-tier patrons, Sarah, Maya, Robert, Grace, Daughter Wimbus, Jin, Monkey Criminal, Merzy, Lily, Whoops, The Day Dude, Dominic, Hi Liztis of Wimbus, Pyrus, Heather, Jeremiah, April, Jenna, Justin, Haley, Cherryman equals Quartermaster, Yahweh Yowie, Leticia, Casey, Denizen of the Punk Rock Candy Mountain, and turns out 10 Crimes the Crime Weaver suck at Paradox.
Thank you, patrons.
Thank you, patrons. Thank you always, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Thank you, Roald Dahl.
Thank you, Roald Dahl.
Thank you, the Neon.
Thank you, the Neon.
Thank you, Knives.
Thank you, Knives.
Thank you, Yonder Toad.
Thank you, Yonder Toad.
Thank you, Mother Wimbus.
Thank you, Mother Wimbus.
Thank you, the Furies.
Thank you, the Furies. Thank you, Jam.
Thank you, Jam.
Nothing else is worth it.
No,
I was just going to do one for each episode.
Okay.
All right.
That's fair.
We're What the Folklore, and that's how it works.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have story suggestions for us, please send them to wtfolklore@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.